You're listening to Lace Up with your host, VJ Johnson II. Grab your tennis shoes, get your cleats, because it's time to lace up. What's going on, everybody? Welcome to Lace Up. I'm your host, VJ Johnson II, ready to give you the latest, hottest news and updates in the world of sports. I appreciate everybody jumping in and joining the podcast right now and giving me a little bit of your time to talk some good, healthy sports talk as always. Look, y'all, I know I've been away. Look, first and foremost, let me just start off by saying Happy New Year to everybody. Those of you who I hadn't been able to say Happy New Year to, man, we officially, you know, made it to 2026. It's been a really good start to the new year. I hope you guys have had the same. Excited to, you know, start a new chapter. Obviously, you know, 2025 brought its, you know, ups and downs and challenges and obstacles as each year does. But very, very excited and looking forward to what 2026 and what God's going to do for me and for you in this year. But yes, y'all, I know I've been away, but I'm glad to be back. It's just been a lot going on, man, that last half of the year in 2025 leading into this year. So, but again, I'm excited. I'm looking forward to this journey with you guys. And look, we are approaching, you know, a sad time for us football fans. It's you know, getting towards the end of the football season. We got the college football national championship that's going to be played on Monday. And then we have the NFL playoffs that are going on currently as well, with the Super Bowl just around the corner in the first week of February. And girlfriends that are listening, look, I know that this is a really exciting time for, you know, most girlfriends that are not in sports. Y'all are jumping for joy as we count down these last, 4 weeks or so before the seasons are done. But, you know, not going to think about that right now. I want to jump into things because we got a lot of good things to talk about. Again, like I said, heavy college, heavy NFL, man, a lot going on in the world of sports. We had some coaching changes and stuff like that that I wanted to dive into and unpack as well. So with that being said, let's kick it to it, man. Let me start the show off talking about my guy, Caleb Williams, man. Caleb Williams, a.k.a. Iceman, led his seventh comeback, led the Bears to their seventh comeback in a win over the Packers in the wild card round, 31-27. Just want to, you know, this guy's unbelievable, right? You know, Caleb and the Bears, they do it again. I mean, time and time again. How many times this year have, you know, we Chicago Bears fans, or even those who, you know, aren't fans of the Bears, looking at scores of our games late in the fourth quarter and, you know, turning the game off or oh, that game is over. And then you flip to it later and you see, you know, the final score of the game and the Bears have won. I mean, time and time and time again, they call them the Cardiac Bears for a reason. They just don't quit. They don't die. They never give up. As Bears fans, we're pissed the first three quarters of the game. It's an emotional roller coaster. But by the time the fourth quarter rolls around and the belief, it kicks in. I can't explain it, but this team has it. They never give up. They have that belief in themselves that no matter what, you know, they're in this game. In every game, no matter what, as long as the clock has not hit zero, right? And you know, in this game, it was no different. I mean, you go into halftime down 21-3. It could have been 24-3 when McManus actually missed a field goal before halftime. But you go into the locker room down 21-3, and as Bears fans, you know, down 18 against the Packers in a wild card game, win or go home, it's not looking too promising. But they come out in the second half. The defense looks different. They're getting stops. They're getting the offense the ball back. And, you know, even with those defensive stops, the Bears, you know, were getting close but couldn't quite get to the end zone. So now you look up, it's you know, 21-9. And, you know, look, that's not a game that's out of reach by any stretch of the imagination. And, you know, you look up, the Bears get another stop, they get a score, right back in it. And then even then, you know, Packers scored, Bears came back. It's I'm going to break it down based off of the timestamps just so you guys can see, you know, what I'm talking about. I don't know a lot of you all watch the game, but I also know a lot of people who turn the game off. But, you know, this is one of the most improbable, impressive Chicago Bears comebacks that I've ever seen in my life. And I think really in Chicago Bears history. And they did it not only to the Packers, but they did it to the Packers for a second time. You rewind back, you know, just a few weeks ago, Caleb Williams walk off ball to DJ Moore for a touchdown in overtime. Bears came back in that one in an improbable comeback. I mean, we're talking, when I say improbable, their win percentage is less than 10%, or going in between 10 and maybe 14 or 15% in the fourth quarter to win these games. And they're finding ways to do it. Now, a lot has been said about Ben Johnson's comments in the locker room when he said, you know, bleep the Packers. Well, he said F the Packers, right? And, you know, a lot of people have a problem with that. And a lot of people say that that's classless and he should be doing those things. And listen, as a Bears fan, as a diehard Bears fan from Chicago, we don't care. Like, and here's the reason why we don't care. And I'm not trying to be insensitive, obviously, to certain people who feel the way that you feel. But true diehard Bears fans who didn't just get on this bandwagon, we literally have been dealing with being tormented by Green Bay Packers fans after the Packers had been dominating us over the, you know, last 5 to 10 years. It's nonstop, just heckling, just we own you. The Bears suck. Even draft night, it was all fun and games when A.J. Hawk gets up there and starts off the draft with, the draft that was in Green Bay with, oh, the Bears still suck. It's all fun and games then, right? But when we do it, when we finally, you know, get a team that can finally knock you guys off, now it's a problem. Now Packers fans are making excuses. Oh, the Bears didn't want to win that game. The Packers lost it more than the Bears won. Stop. That's one of the most egregious things that I've ever heard. It really is. The Bears stole that game. The Packers didn't give it away. The Bears stole it. They took your lunch money. Okay? They took your lunch money. And look, deal with it. It's okay. We've dealt with it. We've had to deal with it, especially when Packers fans are gloating and heckling us after they were beating Bears teams that weren't even nowhere near on the same level. I mean, we have wide receiver 3 and 4s out there in the starting lineup. We got Equanimeous St. Brown and guys like that out there starting as wide receivers. It was all fun and games then. But now, Caleb Williams is in town now. And he's now 3-1 against the Packers. He won one last year. He's three and one, I think, because he won one last year. He lost one this year and won two. He's 3-1 against the Packers. So, look, the tables are turning, y'all. They really are. And, look, we had the cheese grater hats out. We were grating the cheese, like all of that. I mean, these cheese grater hats are going crazy. You know, all of the fans, I know you've seen the cheese grater foam hats. Those are selling out like crazy. Shout out to the company, the family that started it. I can only imagine what this is doing for their business. But, look. We had the cheese grater hats out. We're moving on. And look, from me to you and from all the Bears fans to the Packers fan, man, enjoy Cancun, man. I'm sorry. Enjoy it. Have a great time. But let me just, you know, break down this just a little bit more before I move on. Because, look, I just had to sit in this for a minute because it was so satisfying. I mean, I can't begin to explain to y'all, for those of you guys who are not Bears fans, like how much this really meant to the city. But, you know, even looking at Caleb Williams in this game, 361 yards, two touchdowns, two interceptions, and he had a QBR, which is a quarterback rating of 36.9, but it didn't matter because Iceman is making plays when they count. That fourth and eight that he converted, that was the season right there. One of the most amazing throws that we've seen in NFL history that they're going to be talking about from now forever. I mean, you just – this guy has a clutch gene that you just cannot you can't coach that. He just has it. He has that it factor, right? And now, you know, before I move on, I just wanted to break down what this score was like in the fourth quarter of the game. So you go into the fourth quarter, early in the fourth quarter, Bears are down 21-6. With 10 minutes, just under 11 minutes left, they're down 21-9. With a little over 8 minutes left, they're down 21-16. With 4 minutes and 27 seconds left in the game, I mean, 4 minutes and 20 seconds left in the game, they're down 27-16. So they cut the lead to 5, and then they go down by 11, right? So they scored, then the Packers came right back and scored 4 minutes later. So now that fourth and eight happens, they convert that I was just talking about. They score and get the 2-point conversion. So it's 27-24 now with 4 minutes and 18 seconds left. Packers drive the ball all the way down the field. They miss a field goal. Bears get it back. Bears drive down the field. Beautiful design play by Ben Johnson on a double move to DJ Moore to take the lead 31-27. And it's a minute and 36 seconds left in this game. And they're up by 4 points. And at the end, the defense, you know, let them get down the field, you know, within, I think it was like at the 30-yard line or just inside the 30. But that last minute, you know, last second heave from Jordan Love just wasn't enough because nobody was open. And Bears, look, sealed the deal, man. And we'll be hosting the Rams in the divisional round on Sunday night. So great game. Amazing comeback, man. Shout out to the Bears. Look. Just still in shock. I was still watching highlights. I mean, I've been watching highlights of that since last week. It's just you can't begin to explain how amazing that was. But with that, man, just want to move on, man, because I want to give you guys a quick preview of the AFC and NFC divisional rounds. But before I do that, you are listening to the Lace Up Sports Talk Show right here on iHeartRadio. Audio Boom, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify. And I'm also streaming live right now on YouTube. So make sure, look, you click that button below on the YouTube channel for those of you who are watching. And make sure you subscribe to the channel. That'll give you updates on whenever I go live, whenever I post a new episode. You'll be notified and you'll be in the know of what's going on. And also, for those of you who are listening on our streaming apps, go ahead and like, comment, subscribe, share, so that you can also be notified and up to date with what's going on with the Lace Up Sports Talk Show. All right, with that, let's jump in and talk about the AFC and NFC divisional round preview. And so the matchups are as follows. So tomorrow, on Saturday, we have the Bills going on the road to Denver to face the Broncos. That game is kicking off at 4:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Denver is a 1.5-point favorite in this one at home. The over-under is 45.5. And look, this one is going to be an interesting matchup right here. So definitely looking forward to that. You got the Bills that, you know, obviously, you know, they're coming in, you know, after a win and you know, looking to, you know, Josh Allen looking to get these guys over the hump. But we'll get into a little bit about how we got here. I just want to run down the matchups real quick. Second matchup tomorrow night, 8 p.m. This one's going to be on Fox. So the first one's on CBS. The second one's going to be on Fox. You got the 49ers traveling on the road to this Seattle Seahawks. And Seattle is actually a 7-point favorite in this one. Over under is 44.5. So again, another big matchup. This is a divisional, battle in the divisional round. Again, 49ers and Seahawks playing for the third time this year. Then on Sunday, you have the Los Angeles Rams traveling on the road to face my Chicago Bears at 6:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. That's going to be on NBC and Peacock. The Rams are actually a 3.5-point favorite in this one, which is what we love. We want to be the underdogs in this one. The over-under is 48.5. Definitely looking forward for this one. And then you got the Texans going on the road to New England to face the Patriots at 3 p.m. On Sunday. That's going to be ESPN and ABC. So I should have said that one first, because that one's 3, and then the Bears got and the Rams have the late night game. But again, Texans, Patriots, 3 p.m. ESPN. Patriots are actually a 3-point favorite in this one. All right, so let's talk about how we got here. Again, really quickly, the Bills, they were able to squeeze out a 27-24 victory over the Jacksonville Jaguars on last week on the road. So that was a tight game, but they were able to squeeze it out. The 49ers, they had an impressive win 23-19 against the defending Super Bowl champions, Philadelphia Eagles. Even after losing George Kittle, which is even more impressive, you got your best, one of your best weapons in George Kittle, and prayers up for him. I hate to see players go down with serious injuries, especially like him, that's going to end his season, unfortunately. But the 49ers rallied together. They've been playing without him for some weeks, so that wasn't something that they weren't used to. But you obviously don't want to see a player like Kittle go down at all. But they were able to rally and be able to get the win. Defense showed up, got some stops, held A.J. Brown to nothing really at all. I think he only had like one or two catches in the game, which is not surprising because they kind of been doing that all year. But again, impressive win for the Niners. Again, Bears had an incredible comeback to get a win over the Packers, 31-27. The Texans actually knocked off the Steelers 30-6, even after, they looked very suspect and shaky in the beginning of this game. It just couldn't get right. C.J. Stroud, fumbling it left and right. They were turning the ball over. It was like 4 turnovers, I think. But they were still able to get a 30-6 win. And that goes to show you that was all about the defense. I mean, this Texans defense is elite, and they showed it. And they put the team on their back, because that is the only reason why they won that game. If it was not for their defense, man, that could have been a totally different story. But they held it down even in spite of the turnover. So, again, those are the matchups, and that's how we got here. Stay tuned later on the show so I can give you guys my predictions, because I definitely am excited about these picks. Again, we have... Just to refresh again, Bills, Broncos, 49ers, Seahawks. You got the Bears, Rams and the Bears, and then you got the Texans and the Patriots. All right. Okay, so let's talk about some head coaching changes that have taken place in the NFL this week. So after the Ravens seasons ended, the Ravens actually, fired John Harbaugh. And so now news is here that Giants are set to hire John Harbaugh, bring him to New York. So let's talk about that. They're still, obviously finalizing the deal to make him the head coach. It's not a done deal just yet, but they are working on that. Again, they're finalizing an agreement to make John Harbaugh their next head coach. This is big. I think that they're still, again, like I said, they're negotiating numbers, and they said that there's a lot of things to work through. But you got a guy in John Harbaugh. He's 63 years old, one of the oldest coaches in the NFL right now, if not the oldest. I don't know who's the oldest, but I have to fact check that. But he has spent the last 18 seasons, obviously, in Baltimore. His record in Baltimore was 180 in 113. He also won a Super Bowl as well. So did bring the city of Baltimore a Super Bowl. Now, on the flip side, you look at the New York Giants, you know, they have gone just 7-27, you know, over the past two seasons. So this is going to be a big boost for them, and they could benefit from a coach in John Harbaugh who's proven, who's won and won a lot at this stage, and has won the big game. Has been a part of a lot of, you know, huge games throughout his tenure. Now, you know, he's going to be taking over for Brian Daboll, who obviously was fired back in November. And, you know, they had Mike Kafka, who was like the interim coach until they could, you know, bring in who they wanted. So when John Harbaugh was let go, you know, they jumped on that. And Harbaugh actually interviewed with the Falcons and the Titans. But again, the Giants were the first team to have him. Actually, he didn't interview with them. He had plans to interview with the Atlanta Falcons and the Tennessee Titans. But the Giants were the first to bring him in to the facility, and they didn't let him leave. So that's how you do it. You know, you got your guy, you go get him. And that's what they did. So I just want to take a snapshot of his time at Baltimore and what he's going into in New York, just a little bit more in depth, because, again, over the last five seasons, you know, the Ravens and Giants, they have been in two totally different ends of winning and losing. OK, and they're going to hope that John Harbaugh comes in and turns this thing around. So let's look at his time and let's compare in specific categories. So throughout his time in Baltimore, his win percentage was tied for fifth, you know, in the NFL. The Giants' win percentage is 31st, so just ahead of last in the NFL. While he was in Baltimore, they were sixth in points per game. The Giants are 30th currently. While he was in Baltimore, the Ravens were fourth in allowing their opponents points per game. They were fourth in NFL. The Giants are 27th. The Baltimore Ravens were fifth in yards per game during his time in Baltimore. The Giants are 29th. And last but not least, the opponent's yards per game. While he was in Baltimore, they were 11th in NFL. The Giants are 30th. So they're at the bottom, very bottom half of the league in all of those categories. So, you know, Harbaugh's going to have a lot of work to do. And, you know, I think that, you know, when he was looking at and evaluating this thing, obviously, I think the two most attractive jobs were the Falcons and the Giants. And you look at the Giants when they, you know, with having, you know, Jackson Dart and the weapons that are around him, you know, he kind of, obviously, I'm not comparing Jackson Dart to Lamar, but I'm, you know, looking at this thing and saying, you know, Harbaugh obviously is looking at Jackson Dart's dual threat ability. And he obviously loves to have that. You don't necessarily know what you have in a quarterback just yet in Atlanta. Michael Penix, obviously, I think that he's really good and he can develop and be one of the guys. But, you know, his injury history is a bit of a concern. But I do think that he can overcome that and he can be successful in this league. But you, again, you also not only look at the quarterback, you also look at the draft capital. The Giants there are actually drafting. They have the fifth pick in this draft this year. And again, you know, you got Dart, you got Malik Nabers, you got, solid guys on defense. You know, obviously they haven't shown it on the field, but you have some pieces that you can work with. And draft capital is obviously something that's attractive. And with them having the fifth pick, you know, obviously that's going to be something good. Now, they don't have a third round pick because they used that to get Jackson Dart, but they could trade, get that back, obviously, in the draft. So I'm pretty sure they're going to be active in making some moves there. Now, let's look at the cap space, because they're expected to have just over $20 million in cap space. So not a whole lot, but it's going to grow another $20 million to $30 million with cuts. And it's going to be over $100 million in 2027. So there's a lot of money that they're going to have on the table in cap space that they can spend and bring some talent in. And that flexibility obviously is going to allow them to, fill some holes and major needs on their roster. And last but not least, before I you know, getting to the next topic. Harbaugh, he actually ranks 12th in NFL history with 139 wins. And again, he took the Ravens to a Super Bowl title in 2012. And he actually was named NFL Coach of the Year in 2019. And while he was leading the Ravens in 18 seasons, he was actually the second longest active coach in the league behind Mike Tomlin, who was in his 19th season with the Steelers before he stepped down on Monday. So that's a perfect segue into my next point of talking about Mike Tomlin. So again, Mike Tomlin has stepped down, which was, you know, a surprise to some, not shocking to many. But stepped down after 19 seasons, a 19-year run with the Pittsburgh Steelers, in which he never had a losing season. I think that, you know, looking at this, I'm not mad at him stepping down because, you know, he's looking at the situation and saying, hey, look, the writing was on the wall. They were going to release Mike Tomlin more than likely. And it was just one of those situations where, you know, I'll leave before you get me. I think that that was just the situation. And after suffering a blowout loss like that in the playoffs, it was like, you know, that was the icing on the cake. And, you know, I think that he felt that and he went ahead and made his move. And you can't blame him for it. He's 53 years old. He's not expected to coach anywhere in 2026, even though I still think that, you know, he could reconsider and look at the Atlanta Falcons. You obviously had the Tennessee Titans are a team that are on the table, too. But you look at the Atlanta Falcons and, you know, what they have. They have a lot of speed on defense. They have some good role players there. You got Bijan Robinson. You got Drake London. You got some guys, right, that you can work with. So while he says and while they're not, I don't think he officially came out and said that he's not going to be coaching. But I think that as he's stepping down and kind of taking some time to himself, he's actually going to have, you know, he's going to have some time. But I think the Falcons, obviously, they don't want to let too much time, you know, go by because they do need to get, you know, their coach in place. They do need to start retooling the roster and bringing, you know, offensive and defensive staff in. And, you know, Tomlin is a guy who's he's never had a losing season. This is a no-brainer, right? If I'm the Atlanta Falcons, who just hired Matt Ryan as their president, you know, football, I'm getting on the phone and I'm talking to Mike Tomlin. I'm seeing what his number is. I'm seeing what is it going to take for me to get Mike Tomlin to Atlanta. And they're probably doing that right now. But I hope that they were doing it as soon as possible because you have an opportunity here to completely turn this team around, bringing in a guy like Tomlin. And I just wanted to read a statement that Mike Tomlin left, you know, for the organization. Just brief. I don't want to read the whole thing, but I'll just kind of skim over it a little bit. And he mentioned how, you know, he says this organization has been a huge part of my life for many years. He says it's been an honor to lead this team. And talks about how he's grateful for the opportunity to have been there that long. And he thanked the players and obviously the staff and everybody who was committed and dedicated to him that made his journey meaningful. And then he ended it by thanking, you know, Steeler Nation for their passion, their loyalty and their expectations. Right. And so they did say that he had, you know, before he made his decision, he spent some time in the facility, you know, hugging the players, you know, coaches, staff, just thanking them and everything like that. So bittersweet moment. And, you know, a lot of players that hit them hard, like TJ Watt and TJ Watt. I'm sorry. JJ's the older brother. Sorry. TJ Watt, you know, took it a little hard and you know, a few other players I heard as well. Now, the interesting thing about this, right, because Mike Tomlin stepped down and he was not actually fired, he actually stepped down with 2 years remaining on his contract, right? So because of that, he actually, if he was decided to come back, they would actually have to work out a deal where they would pretty much have to trade him to a team, right? So it's actually, you know, that's something that's pretty interesting, because they can actually get something for Mike Tomlin. And you don't really see that happen a lot, right? But just to talk about some of Tomlin's accomplishments, you know, again, never having a losing season, he clinched his 200th career NFL victory in Week 16 against the Lions, and tied Chuck Knoll for ninth with 193 regular season wins in Week 18 against the Ravens when they clinched the AFC North title. Again, with his departure, you know, they're going to the Steelers are just going to be looking for just their fourth coach since 1969. That's impressive. Again, Tomlin did sign an extension in 2024 that could have kept him through 2027. But again, because he resigned while still under contract, they actually retain his coaching rights, and they could negotiate compensation for him if he decides to return to the sidelines before the end of the 2027 season. If he does not, the Steelers can't do that. All of that's off, and it's all fair games for anybody to reach out to him to bring him in as the next head coach. So, yeah, man. Look, hats off to Mike Tomlin and everything that he's done. And, you know, it says a lot to be a coach that has never had a losing season. So he's definitely going in the Hall of Fame for sure. Before we go into our next topic, man, again, you are listening to the Lace Up Sports Talk Show right here on Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, and Audio Boom. I'm also streaming on YouTube as well. Make sure you hit the subscribe button so that you can be up to date and notified when episodes are posted, whenever I go live. And for those of you who are streaming via the apps, make sure you like, comment, subscribe. And on all platforms, make sure you leave your comments, man. I'm interested to hear what you guys have to say. Drop the comments in those comment section, man. Give me your feedback. Share your thoughts. Let me know how you're feeling. Who are your Super Bowl picks? Who you think is going to win the national championship, which is what I'm going to talk about next, which I'm excited about. Not excited, because, you know, obviously for reasons, and I'll get into it. Yeah, man, you make sure you guys, you know, leave those comments, man, and want this to be as interactive as possible. So let me know how you're feeling, man. We can talk about it. We can unpack it. All right, man, let's talk about the national championship game, the college football national championship game that's going down on Monday, January 19th at 7:30 p.m. on ESPN. I don't know why they put 7:30 p.m., because it's probably not going to kick off until like 8 o'clock, because they're going to do all these intros and all the mini concert and all that. Then you got the national anthem. It's all the stuff that's going to be going down. But it's taking place in Miami. Again, number 10 Miami Hurricanes is going to be facing off against the number 1 Indiana Hoosiers. This is a home game for Miami. Indiana is actually a 8.5-point favorite in this game. The over-under is 47.5. And, you know, you look at a matchup like this, you know, if you told me Miami and Indiana would be in the national championship at the beginning of the season, I would have laughed at you, right? I thought, you know, Alabama had a chance to get to the national championship. I thought with the team that we had coming in, you know, they could, you know, make a serious run. And, you know, there were some inconsistencies toward the latter half of the season that ended up cannibalizing the Crimson Tide. But really throughout the whole course of the season, not being able to run the football and things of that nature. I don't want to make this about Alabama, but more about the teams that actually, you know, obviously made it. But, you know, I would have laughed if you told me these two teams would have been in the national championship. But they're here, right? And I know that obviously everybody is waiting on me to talk about the Indiana-Alabama game. I'm not going to get super, super deep into it. But what I will say is, did Alabama get smacked? Did Alabama get whooped? Did we get beat up and down the field? Absolutely. We did. I mean, I didn't think Indiana was going to do that to us. But they did. You know, obviously, you know, teams had a chance to win. I didn't think that they were going to they beat Alabama so convincingly. And that was one of the probably the worst blowout loss that I've seen from Alabama outside of the national championship when Clemson won, when they had Trevor Lawrence against, you know, Bama when they had Tua. And, you know, it was very frustrating, right? It surprised me. You know, Indiana's just a super disciplined football team, and, you know, the inconsistencies from Alabama just showed, right? And so, got to look forward to next year, man. Got to move onward, and because if things don't go into a positive direction, man, some people are not going to have their jobs. So that was definitely not the Alabama standard, and that's unacceptable. But trouble don't last always, and we got some time to retool, refocus, got some guys coming back. And we'll see what next year brings, man. The portal's open, and, you know, all these players are going all over the place right now. So we'll see what happens, and we'll just wait. But again, to focus on the national championship game, you look at Indiana and Miami, right? And, you know, I wanted to kind of unpack both of these teams and talk about how they match up. So, you know, Indiana with Kurt Cignetti comes from the Nick Saban tree of coaches. You know, Kurt Cignetti spent some time in Alabama and obviously learned a lot from Nick Saban and his mentality. Obviously, you know, during the time that he's come up as a head coach, you can see it in his football team. But Indiana's the most disciplined team in the country, okay? And what I'll say about Miami, I think Miami is the most one of the most battle-tested teams in the country. Not the most battle-tested, but one of the most battle-tested teams in the country. And why do I say that? Because you look at a team in Miami who, and I'm not even saying this about the ACC or anything like that, but you look at a team in Miami who you go coming into the year, they obviously are not looked at as a team that's going to, you know, make a lot of noise. You find your way into the college football playoff because you did your job and beat Notre Dame early in the season. So they gave you the benefit of doubt with the head to head. You have to go on the road and beat a Texas A&M team in College Station, which is not hard to do. And they shut them down, didn't even allow a touchdown. Low scoring game, but they did not even allow a touchdown. Then you not only go into College Station and you win, but then you're rewarded with the luxury of having to play, not luxury, but then you have to go and play Ohio State, which I'm, you know, obviously they're not scared to play Ohio State. They were looking forward to that because there's a lot in Ohio in Ohio State and Miami's history, you know, in the 90s or, you know, when Miami lost to Ohio State off of a controversial pass interference call that gave Ohio State the ball back to force overtime. And they ultimately beat Miami in overtime. So they've held on to that, you know, for a very long time. Right. And so, you know, beating that Ohio State team, which, you know, people didn't, you know, a lot of people didn't give them a chance to do. They went in and did their thing against Ohio State. And, you know, now they're here against Indiana. And they did their thing against Ole Miss, too. And Ole Miss is not a team that's easy to beat. You know, obviously you saw what they did. That game came down to the wire. But a clutch drive, you know, from Miami and Carson Beck, you know, late in the game. So these are some, you know, again, battle-tested games, right? So that's why I say they're one of the most battle-tested teams. And Indiana is one of the most disciplined teams, right? So now the question is, where does that discipline and that battle-tested, how is that going to match up? So looking at both of these teams, right, let's take a step back and, you know, take a look at how these teams fared in their respective conferences as well as in the nation. So Indiana was number two in yards per game, number one in rushing yards per game at 218, number two in points allowed, which only allowing 11 points per game and yards allowed. So they were number two in both of those categories. And then they were number one in sacks with 45. And, you know, that was in the Big Ten. Okay. And when it comes to sacks in the nation, they were number two in the nation in sacks with 45. So that's how they fared in their conference. And now Miami, they were number one in points allowed, only allowing 14 points per game and yards allowed and sacks at 47 sacks in the ACC. And they're not only number one in sacks in the ACC, they're number one in the nation in sacks. Okay, so you got Miami, who's number one in sacks at 47. You got Indiana, who's number two in sacks in the nation. Okay, both of these teams match up pretty evenly. But one thing I think to watch when you're looking at this is the size difference at the line of scrimmage, because I think that that's going to be the difference of the game. And so let's unpack that, because the Miami Hurricanes, they have a notable size advantage when it comes to the offensive and defensive lines compared to, you know, Indiana Hoosiers. OK, because Miami's players are taller, they're heavier on average. OK, so let's look at the comparison of the offensive and defensive lines. So, again, Miami's offensive lineman is significantly larger than Indiana's defensive line. So their offensive line, their average height is 6'5 to 6'6 with a weight of 320 to 330 pounds. Indiana's defensive line has an average height of 6'3 to 6'4, so 2 inches shorter, and then a weight of 275 to 290 pounds. So again, Miami 6'5 to 6'6 with 320 to 330 pounds. Indiana's defensive line, 6'3 to 6'4, 275 to 290 pounds. So you can see the difference in averages of over 50 pounds heavier per player than Indiana's defensive line. Okay. Now let's look at the other side of things. Let's look at Miami's defensive line versus Indiana's offensive line. So their defensive line, talking about Miami, is slightly heavier than on average than Indiana's offensive line. So their average height on their defensive line is 6'4 with the weight of 305 to 315 pounds. Then the average height of Indiana's offensive line is the same, 6'4 to 6'5. So similar in height. And their weight is 300 plus pounds, but slightly lighter on average than Miami's defensive line, because there are a few players. There's more players in the low 300s than they are the that 310, 315 range. Okay. So again, there's a distinct size advantage for Miami on the line of scrimmage, and where games won and lost on the line of scrimmage. So I'm looking at that and I'm saying to myself, okay, there's an advantage. If you want to look at advantages, there's one for Miami. Obviously, Indiana is going to have the advantage of just the fact that they play so disciplined and mistake free. That's an advantage, right? The fact that you are not penalized a lot, you play mistake free football, you take care of the football, everything, you know, done right in the correct way. That's an advantage for them, right? So not only, you know, do I want to look at the line of scrimmage, right? So we just took a look at that and unpacked that. Let's talk about my X factors for the game, okay? So I'm looking at Indiana, right? And I'm going to do three X factors for each team, okay? So my first X factor for Miami, I'm looking at their running back, Roman Hemby. He's over 1,000-yard rusher this year, 1,060 yards. He's averaging 5 yards a carry. You know, obviously, Indiana likes to go on these long, methodical drives and control the clock. And so you look at Roman Hemby as a solid running back. So if he's getting 5 yards a pop, that's going to do a lot, right? My second X factor, I'm looking at Lewis Moore, their defensive back. He's had six interceptions on the year, which is tied for first in the Big Ten. And we all know with Carson Beck, he is, you know, he will put the ball in harm's way, right? We've known Carson Beck to you know, he's thrown his fair share of interceptions. He actually did, you know, pretty solid against Ole Miss. But there were a few times where, you know, he had some passes that should have been intercepted that were just dropped. So looking at that again. Their running back, their DB, and last but not least, another wide receiver for me that I'm looking at is Charlie Becker. He's 6'4". He's physical. He's really good at high pointing the football and catching those 50-50 balls. So that can create matchup problems for, Miami with a guy who's like that, who can catch the ball as well as he does. He doesn't jump out at you with all the stats, but when it comes to making a big catch or a big play, he can do that, and he's that guy. So those are my three X factors for Indiana. Again, Roman Hemby, their running back, Lewis Moore, their defensive back, Charlie Becker, their wide receiver. Now let's look at Miami. My X factors for Miami, I'm looking at their running back, Mark Fletcher, okay? 6'2", 225. He's also over 1,000 yards rushing on the year. If you want to keep Indiana off the field, feed this guy. Miami is also a team that likes to go on long, methodical drives as well, right? Control the clock and score, okay? And the way that they're able to do that and do it so effectively as they do is by feeding Mark Fletcher, because he is a Derrick Henry-sized running back. Like, he is that type of guy. Like, he's huge, right? And he's a hard guy to bring down. And he's getting, you know, he averages like 5-6 yards a carry. Actually, I think it's a little more close to six. Each time I see him get the ball, he's getting at least 6 yards, 5-6 yards. So that's going to be huge for them. My other guy, I'm looking at Malachi Toney, their wide receiver. Okay, second in the ACC in receiving with over 1,000 receiving yards as a freshman. He's only a freshman, right? Stepping up big, especially in the semifinal, had a big play where he took a screen for a touchdown. I think it was like 40 yards or so against Ole Miss. Huge play. And this guy has a clutch gene in him as well. And he's speedy. So, watch out for him. And my last X factor for Miami, I'm looking at Akeem Mesidor, their defensive lineman, who has 10.5 sacks on the year, which is number one in the ACC. If you can get pressure on Mendoza, That's what you want, right? If you can get him off of his rhythm, we've seen when you pressure him, you can throw him off, and everything is timed with Indiana. Everything is like perfectly timed and disciplined and well done. But if you can throw that off and throw it off consistently, now you're cooking, right? And then they're going to have Miami's crowd there too. So the crowd is going to play a factor. You know, well, Indiana fans travel extremely well because they took over Atlanta. Didn't expect that. But, I don't say I didn't expect it, but I didn't expect them to overpower it as much as they did. You want to put pressure on Mendoza and get him into off of his rhythm, get him second guessing himself and force him to throw passes faster than he wants to. Right. Looking at this game. I just unpacked it for you. I just told you the X factors. I told you the difference at the line of scrimmage. And now it's time for me to give you my pick. So, again, I'm looking at this game. And, you know, obviously Indiana, nobody expected them to be here. I sure didn't. but they played mistake-free football. And they've gotten up to this point because of that. They're sitting on the cusp of one of the most historic seasons in college football history with the win in the national championship game. I'm looking at Miami again, a team what people didn't expect to do much this year. You know, a lot of people are wondering when the U was coming back. And Mario Cristobal has got his guys in there, and he has officially brought the U back. And we've seen it. And so you look at this game and the things that are they're going to play a factor, the things that are that it's going to come down to. And I'm saying to myself, who's going to step up? What team is going to create a turnover? Because I think one turnover could be the difference. Just one in a game like this, because both of these teams can control the ball and they control the clock so well. Just one turnover or a missed field goal, something like that could be a huge difference maker in a game like this, okay? The pick that I'm going to go with is Miami. I'm picking Miami to win this game. I think that having that home crowd behind them, having, you know, that juice and the momentum that they're riding into this game, and the fact that, again, they are at home. You got Fletcher running back. You got, you know, an experienced quarterback at Carson Beck. Obviously, he hadn't been at this level yet, but I think that Miami has the guys on their offense and defense that are physical. They're not afraid of Indiana, and I think that we'll see that on Monday night. I think that Miami is hungry, and everybody is riding on Indiana, obviously, to win this game. So they're underdog in this game, and I typically always go with the underdogs in matchups when it's not my team. And I like Miami in this game. I think that Miami wins this game. It's going to be a tough game. It's going to be tight. It's going to be down to the wire. It could very well be, you know, a low-scoring game. It could be. I don't think it will be, but because of so much clock that these teams take off, you know, so much time that they take off the clock, it could be. We'll see. But I have Miami winning this game and hoisting the national championship trophy. I'll say, yeah, I don't even want to, I'm not really big into score predictions, but I'll say Miami 38-34. I'll give that score prediction. So if I'm right, I'm coming back. I'm playing those lottery numbers, 3-8, 3-4. So that's who I'm picking. I'm picking Miami to win this game. All right, and now let's fast forward and let's talk about who's going to advance to the AFC and the NFC championship game. And then we will get out of here, y'all. So, again, looking at the matchups, man, Bills-Broncos, let's start off with that one. Again, the Bills coming off of that win against the Jags and coming into Denver. You know, I'm looking at this Bills team. You know, they obviously lost. They're down a receiver. I think one of their starting receivers ended up getting hurt. I think it was Gabe. I don't know if it was Gabe Davis or I can't recall who it was, but they're down a receiver, one of their starters. I think that, you know, going into Denver, that's going to be a tall task. I think the Broncos, they're rested, they're fresh. The Mile High City is going to be rocking. And I think that the Broncos are going to win this game. So I'm going to go with the Broncos. I do think that it'll be a good game just because Josh Allen can keep you in games. But ultimately, I think the Broncos are going to prevail and they'll get the W in this one. And this is going down tomorrow. Next game tomorrow night, 49ers and the Seahawks. Some news that came out of Seattle. Sam Darnold is actually dealing with a oblique injury right now that he suffered while he was throwing the ball in practice. So they listed him as questionable. There's no chance that he does not play. He's going to play in this game. He'll be ready to go. And then you got the 49ers coming in. Obviously, got handled and dominated by the Seahawks and at the end of the year for them to clinch the number one seed on their home turf. Seahawks came in there and dominated. It was a low-scoring game, but they dominated them. They controlled that game. Niners are going to be without Kittle. He tore his ACL. He's out for the season. They obviously want to come in here and get revenge because they're now 1-1 on the season. The Niners actually won in Seattle. Seattle won in San Francisco. And now here's round three. I'm going to go with the San Francisco 49ers. And I'll tell you the reason why I'm going to go with them just a little bit later. But I'm picking the San Francisco 49ers. I think that being on the road doesn't bother them. They're not afraid. I think they got Christian McCaffrey. They got Juszczyk. They got some guys. Now their defense is the biggest question. That's going to be the biggest concern. But can they get stops? Can they force Darnold into making some mistakes? That's going to be the key. But I'm going to pick the 49ers to come into Seattle, a team who's, you know, they obviously it's going to be a lot of pressure for them to win. So I'm going to pick the Niners to upset the Seahawks in advance to the NFC Championship game. Fast forward, let's talk about the Rams and my. Actually, I'm going to save my Bears and Rams for last because that's the last game on Sunday. Texans and Patriots. You got the Texans coming in, obviously, to the Patriots after coming off of an ugly offensive performance, but they did get the job done. 30-6 against Pittsburgh. You had the Patriots, ugly game against the Los Angeles Chargers. Low scoring, just ugly. But they were able to pull it out, right? I think the Texans coming in, you know, with this elite defense, you know, that's obviously going to pose some problems for Drake May. But I do think the Patriots ultimately come out with the victory simply because, you know, the struggles for the Texans offensively. They have not been, you know, playing their best right now. And so I think that, you know, them if they get in this game and they turn the ball over and C.J. Stroud plays like he did, I don't necessarily think that that's something that you can overcome, giving the ball to the Patriots 3-4 times because from turnovers and giving them a short field. So I'm going to go with the Patriots in this one to win at home in advance of the AFC Championship game to face the Broncos in Denver. And last but not least, man, we got the Los Angeles Rams coming to play my Chicago Bears. The weather is supposed to be a low of 8 or 9 degrees with a wind chill of 20 miles an hour. I hear a lot of people talking about how Matthew Stafford is, you know, obviously used to playing in the cold, and he has played in the cold games. It's just different in Chicago. That wind is different. And, you know, with him being experienced, and they have a couple of guys, Devontae Adams, some guys that have played in the cold, but playing in warm weather in Los Angeles and trying to practice and prepare, there's nothing that can prepare you for that. Now, Ben Johnson did prepare the Bears for this game by cutting off the heaters. He hasn't had the team allow the team play. I mean, to practice with heaters the last few weeks to prepare. So he's got them mentally tough right now. And again, both teams still got to go out there and play, obviously. But just the mental toughness that Ben Johnson is trying to instill in his team is great. And, you know, I think that a lot of people are not giving the Bears a shot in this game. They're saying Matthew Stafford and Devontae Adams and those guys and Puka Nacua, they're saying the Rams are going to come in and put up 50. I heard 50 points on my Chicago Bears, which is absolutely disrespectful. But y'all know who I'm rolling with, man. It's Bear Down all day, every day. Rolling with my Bears, man. I think that, you know, obviously there's a lot that they got to clean up defensively. They're going to have to play, you know, some discipline football on the defensive end. That's something that they have not done. If there is any concern, it's just because, you know, there's some struggles that they've had defensively. But I trust Dennis Allen, you know, to have these boys ready, which is weird to say because I've been pissed off at Dennis Allen for a long time. But, you know, I give him grace because we have not had a full healthy defense the entire year. But you get C.J. Gardner-Johnson back. We got Kyler Gordon that's back. We'll have both of them on the field at the same time. And hopefully that'll create some more pass, you know, some more pass rush opportunities to force Matthew Stafford into to turn the ball over. So while you guys are counting the Bears out, the Bears have the belief. They have the city behind them. The weather obviously is going to be an advantage. And I think that, you know, obviously this will be another tight game. But, you know, I think the Bears can, you know, can and will pull this thing out. And they're going to host the NFC Championship game in Chicago, which is why I picked the 49ers to beat the Seattle Seahawks. Because if the number one seed loses, the Bears being the number two seed get to host the NFC Championship game. So I got the 49ers coming to Chicago, which was you know, a rematch, which will be a rematch of the game of the year that happened, shootout game just a few weeks ago. Those are my predictions. I got Broncos, Patriots, and I got 49ers, Bears, NFC and AFC championship game. So with that, man, I'll say Bear Down. I appreciate y'all sticking with me and rocking with me, man. Stay tuned. We'll continue to cover this thing and follow the NFL playoffs. And, you know, we'll talk about the national championship, what happened on next week. So appreciate everybody. Y'all have a great weekend. Be safe. Enjoy. And as always, man, roll tide and bear down, baby. Let's get it.